ETF Prime is hosted by investment advisors at the ETF store and sponsored by iShares. iShares sponsorship is not an endorsement nor a recommendation for any product or service. iShares is not affiliated with the ETF store, ETF.com, or any of its affiliates. The ETF store is not affiliated with ETF.com or any of its affiliates. ETF.com's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or an indication by ETF.com of the value of any ETF store product or service. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. All investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. The ETF store owns and is responsible for all program content. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate will help you get up to date with what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
Thank you so much for joining me this week. As always, I also want to thank iShares, the exclusive sponsor of ETF Prime. Without question, despite everything that's gone on in the markets this year, one of the hottest topics of 2020 has been ESG investing, sustainable investing. And certainly some of the events we've seen outside of the markets, obviously the pandemic and the civil unrest earlier this year, I think those helped place an even greater spotlight on ESG and have some investors looking deeper into their own values on things like how companies treat employees, frontline workers, what's their track record on workforce diversity, those sorts of things. But even before this year, ESG was gaining more attention. I mean, if you look at ESG ETF flows, the fact is they have seen tremendous growth. No question, off of a smaller asset base, but the growth rate percentage has been high. And I think regardless of where you stand on ESG, everyone can agree this topic has moved to the forefront. It's generating a lot of debate and discussion. And the bottom line is, I think ESG is something every investor and advisor needs to understand. You need to have a handle on this one way or another because it isn't going anywhere. Now, anyone who has listened to this podcast for any length of time, you already know where I stand on ESG investing. I think most people know I'm fairly skeptical. But again, the fact is, I think it's important to look at all sides of an issue, even ones you may not fully agree with. And so this week, I have two absolute thought leaders in this space to help make the case for ESG investing. Guillermo Cano, Executive Director, Index Solutions Research at MSCI, who is one of the world's premier index providers, and Sarah Gelberg, head of U.S. iShares Sustainable ETFs. Of course, iShares is the world's largest ETF issuer. And we're going to cover a lot of ground here. We'll talk ESG data, index construction, implementing ESG in a portfolio. We'll certainly touch on the growth of ESG ETFs, and of course, some of the criticism surrounding ESG. So this should be good. And my hope is everyone can take something away from this and consider the role ESG will play in the future of investing. Now, to start this week, to actually help set the table here, I have ETF.com's editor-in-chief Drew Voros on the line with me from California. He's going to provide a broader overview of the ESG ETF space. We'll talk flows, new launches, performance, and I am very curious to hear how Drew views ESG. We actually haven't discussed this before. So let's jump right in and chat with Drew.
Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
I think we're seeing a different way of ETFs being launched. The real kicker was governance, selling a private data. They really let down their customers repeatedly.
Drew, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Nate. Really looking forward to the show.
All right, so let's start with ESG ETF flows. You heard me mention there at the top that we have seen a higher rate of growth, again, off of a smaller asset base. But what have ESG ETF flows looked like this year?
Well, I think you characterize it correctly. We have seen a big growth on a smaller base. So in 2019, we had new assets of around $9 billion. And we're seeing close to $30 billion this year. So that's a tripling of assets, of new assets, which is impressive to say the least. A little cold water on that. One particular ETF took in about a third of that. ESGU, which is the iShares ESG fund, iShares ESG Aware MSCI USA ETFs, which I'm sure the guests are quite familiar with, is a $12 billion fund. It's been around since 2016. This year took in $9 billion. So a big chunk of that came in. And iShares has been a real mover in the ESG market. And I think if you recall, last year or 18 months ago, BlackRock CEO Larry Fink had written a letter that got picked up by the media, was sent to many companies on improving ESG standards within the companies they're investing in. And they've been a real leader in this push for companies to adjust to ESG criteria, and investors are coming along with that. And again, it is a growing part of not just the ETF world, but all over the global investment universe. It's very big in Europe, and it is something that sticks with a lot of people. And I think it is going to continue to grow. However, I think it is a slow snowball that's rolling and getting bigger. And the momentum isn't quite there yet. The percentages look impressive on AUM growth. But overall, we have a long way to go before I think it is taking market share from SPY or from some of the largest ETFs we see out there. They're basically straight, broad, vanilla equity.
Drew, when you talk about that percentage growth rate, you said 2019, $9 billion in inflows. Is that correct? And then 2020, $33
billion? That's what we have currently, yes.
Okay. Any thoughts on what's driving that? Because that obviously is a tripling, more than tripling. And, you know, at the top, I mentioned the pandemic and social unrest. Maybe investors are thinking more about their own values and the companies they do business with because of those things. I do also think performance has been better with ESG ETFs, and we can talk about why that is. But what do you think have been some of the drivers of inflows this year?
I think it's just an awareness on the investor level. Investors want to know that their money is going to something that they believe in. And I think you're seeing it a lot with a younger investor crowd that is much more socially active, much more aware of how corporations act. But with that said, I also think advisors are driving this home, too. Advisors have become much more educated on what ESG is, or social impact investing, however you want to define it, which is also part of the problem with ESG. It is hard for people to define under one roof. But I think advisors are much more aware than they were 5, even 10 years ago, for sure. And so they're able to speak to this with their clients, and they're able to take on the pros and cons, and they're able to show performance, and they're able to show how exactly these funds are constructed. And so with the advisor being able to educate clients, I think that's been a key component to the growth.
On the note of performance, I do think performance has helped here. I think especially if you look at the more granular segments of ESG, right? Things like clean energy ETFs, which those have been some of the top performing ETFs this year. But can you talk more about the performance side of the equation for ESG ETFs?
Well, you just can't paint a broad stroke here. So it really depends, just like everything. You have to. Every ETF is different. However, there had been a myth out there that ESG or social impact investing came at a cost in performance because you're going to be taking out, for instance, heavy petroleum companies such as Exxon, Mobil. Would that hurt performance? Quite the contrary this year. We've seen clean energy really lead the pack in many areas in the equity market. The idea of a Biden administration coming in and the idea that we're going to see a lot more clean energy pushed, a lot more money going into that has really lifted the market. So at this point in time, ESG is actually doing very well compared to the overall market because of those clean energy components within it. So in that regard, performance is really different across the board. It can't be said that ESG underperforms or ESG overperforms. It has gotten so big. There's 100 ETFs right now on the market in the U.S., so all of them are not performing the same. So it takes diligence, and you just can't assume that ESG is underperforming or overperforming in that broad sense.
What about new ESG ETF launches this year? I know last week we talked about 2020's top ETF launches overall, but we really didn't cover the ESG side in particular. And I do think, fitting with this narrative that there is a lot more interest in ESG, we have seen ETF issuers respond with more products, right? Has anything stood out to you here?
What stood out to me is we're seeing ESG land, and it's landing in different areas. So this year we saw fixed income, we saw emerging markets, and we saw active non-transparent ESG funds come out. We saw EUSB, which is the iShares ESG Advanced Total USD Bond Market. That came out in midsummer, and it has $150 million in assets under management. And just a couple of weeks ago, we saw the Spider Bloomberg SASB Corporate Bond ESG Select ETF, RBND, and that's a fund that's looking at corporate debt and rating it using ESG screens and metrics. So we're seeing the fixed income market being hit. Another one of the biggest launches actually of the year was the iShares ESG MSCI EM Leaders ETF, LDEM, that has seen over $800 million in assets. And that's taking a look at the emerging market equity space and uses and focusing on large and mid-cap stocks with high ESG scores based on the MSCI ratings. And then finally, we also had on the active side, American Century Sustainable Equity ETF, ESGA. That is the what a lot of people like to call, I particularly don't, non-transparent, meaning that we're not seeing the disclosing holdings except for every quarter. And that has taken in over $100 million, and that also launched this summer. So I think what we're seeing is ESG and every part of the ETF market propping up, and I expect that to continue.
You mentioned American Century's, you know, quote-unquote non-transparent ESG ETF, ESGA. One question I have on that, do you think the non-transparent wrapper is best suited for ESG? Because my sense is if you're an ESG-inclined investor, you value transparency and you want to know what you own. Do you think that could be an issue at all for that non-transparent structure marrying ESG?
No, I don't think they're I think they're dissimilar. I think if you believe in ESG and you believe in the active manager that is really holding true to the principles that are being preached to you and that you want to see in your portfolio, I think if you're achieving those goals, then that's different than the transparency you're looking in companies and how they're rated on the ESG scale. So I don't think it matters at all. I think if you believe in the product and the manager and the portfolio manager is applying the goals and principles that are in the prospectus that you bought the fund for, I don't think it matters at all.
By the way, on the topic of new launches, I feel like broad-based ETFs, they get a lot of the attention. But I looked here just over the past few weeks, some of the ESG launches that have come out. You have the Global X Clean Tech ETF, CTEC, the Blue Horizon BNE ETF, ticker BNE, which that holds, quote-unquote, new energy economy companies, you know, really focusing on cleaner, sustainable energy. You have the Adesina Social Justice All-Cap Global ETF, ticker JSTC. What's interesting to me about those is if you just look at the growth of thematic ETFs as a whole this year, that has been a hot area of the market, and it looks like that's bleeding over into the ESG side of the equation as well.
With that said, I'm going to throw some more cold water here. The more products we get are just chasing, you know, that $30 billion of new assets. So what we're going to start seeing is the market being sliced up even thinner when it comes to ESG. It won't just be a broad ESG equity fund. It'll be focusing on certain parts of the market. So as we slice the ESG market thinner and thinner, it's going to require more and more new assets to continue to keep these funds going. So I think that is part of the problem coming up, is that we're going to have so many funds. And while ESG is a real darling inside the financial service industry in the retail market, it doesn't resonate like Tesla does or Bitcoin does. And ESG has not helped itself in trying to describe what it is. People don't really understand that. They understand social responsible investing. They understand impact investing. So how you call it is got to also be overcome so that it resonates more in the retail market and not just with advisors and not just within the financial service industry that thinks, hey, this is meeting a lot of good social goals. It performs. Why wouldn't anybody want this? Because people just don't understand what it is.
So, Drew, a few minutes left here. Let's talk more about that, because as I know you're aware, I'm going to visit with two thought leaders in the ESG space here in just a moment, and they're going to make the case for ESG investing. But as I thought back to our past conversations, you and I haven't really discussed this topic before. I'm just curious, what is your overall view of ESG? And I know we don't have time for a full deep dive here, but just in general, where's your head at here?
I love it. I personally think it's a great idea. The idea of giving you that option of saying, you know what, I want my money to go to companies that in products that I believe in, and maybe I don't believe in gold mining and tearing up part of the most beautiful parts of the earth to pull out some rocks. I think is a real noble pursuit, and it gives, again, investors options to decide how they want to invest their money. With that said, just understand that what you're investing in is not going to perform like another ESG fund is. So I think the investor education needs to take another level up in terms of explaining how different ESG funds are. To get it to be really embraced by the retail public, there really needs to be not so much education, but almost marketing about these kinds of options exist for investors beyond just buying, you know, the Dow or buying the S&P 500. There's a way you can construct your investments to meet your principles and goals that may be on a very social level that's higher than most people.
I think that's extremely well said. I do think there needs to be more education here. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're covering this topic on the podcast and have in the past is I just think there's a lot of confusion around ESG. And there is a marketing element where I think sometimes it gets pitched as the end all be all, or that perhaps you can drive performance, or and you know, I think investors really need to look under the hood and understand what they're getting. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it's not one or the other either. You know, if I was an advisor and somebody was, I don't know, I kind of interested in ESG. Hey, why don't you do both? Get an S&P 500 broad vanilla fund, and let's get an ESG fund that pulls off the S&P 500, and let's see what it looks like over the next year. And I think people will see it's not that crazy, and it's not that odd, and maybe it even does outperform. So, again, I think if people understand there's an option between the S&P 500 and pulling companies out of the S&P 500 that have higher ESG scoring in the way they operate their business or the products they produce, I don't think that level of awareness is out there in the general retail public yet at all.
Well, Drew, great insight as always this week. I should have you stay on the line with me for my next two conversations. I think that'd be a lot of fun. We'll have to do that at some point. But thank you for joining me this week.
Thank you, Nate. Always a pleasure.
That was ETF.com's Drew Voros. My next guest is Guillermo Cano, Executive Director, Index Solutions Research at MSCI. Of course, MSCI is a premier provider of indexes and portfolio construction and risk management tools and research. They're also heavily involved in the ESG space, and Guillermo is now on the line with me from Seattle. Guillermo, welcome to the podcast.
Great. I'm glad to be here.
You know, it's interesting because while ESG is obviously a hot topic now, it's not new, right? And I know MSCI has been involved in this space for quite some time. To begin, can you maybe add some color to that, just in terms of MSCI's history with ESG investing? And then also, I'd love to hear more about your specific role and your involvement with ESG.
Sure. No, thanks a lot. No, you're right. And that's the thing I think that that surprises people, because ESG has been around for, you know, in our case, for about 30 years. We launched the first index as part of a group called KLD Research and Analytics in 1990. And back then, the index had about 400 companies. And obviously, we find that from we go from here till today, and this index is still around. It's the MSCI KLD 400 Social Index. So it's been around for quite some time.
And talk a little bit about your specific role, how you interface with the ESG side of the equation.
Sure. So as part of the Index Solutions team, my role is a lot of fun, actually. We work with asset owners, managers, consultants, and we basically help them do analysis, help them, you know, look at a variety of indexes, whether it be, in our case, you know, factor indexes or cap weight indexes, or really ESG indexes, and help them find different solutions that they can use as part of their portfolio allocation process.
You mentioned MSCI being involved here for over 30 years. I'm curious, from your perspective, how has ESG investing evolved over this time frame, especially as it relates to the index construction?
Sure. Well, you know, that's another one of those things that's evolved significantly. And let's go back to the KLD index, you know, from way back when. And when it first started, the index was maintained by a committee, right? So you had this group of folks that were looking at things like balancing companies along sector weights, along their ESG considerations, along their, you know, their company sizes, things like that. And then you fast forward to the way that we construct our indexes nowadays, and it's a very rigorous process. It's very quantitatively oriented. And we have a set of very transparent rules that form our methodology that folks can read, can look at, and you know, helps them know what they're getting.
When you talk about that rigorous process, one area I'm very curious about when it comes to index construction is the ESG data itself. Because obviously, you can't put together a good index without good data. And I know there are a lot of conflicting sources of data out there where perhaps the same company can be rated very differently on ESG criteria, depending upon who's doing the rating. How does MSCI approach this data side and some of the challenges that can pop up here?
Yeah, well, you know, as you've said, you know, that can be probably one of the more challenging parts of this process, because you basically have a variety of different data that are out there, right? And the data come from disclosures that companies make because they're compelled to. So they're mandatory disclosures. There's disclosures that they decide they want to make because they're voluntary disclosures. And again, these voluntary disclosures don't line up from company to company. And then you basically have what in our case amounts to about 45% of the information that we collect for any given company on average. And so that comes from data that is not either mandated or is not voluntarily disclosed. And so that data comes from a variety of third party or other regulatory data sets or other information that we have to go through systematically. And in terms of the way we approach this, we basically approach this as a series of you know, environmental, social, and governance risks that companies face. But we also look at the way that they might be mitigating some of these risks. And then that's what goes into the final ESG rating or ESG score.
So I guess just to expand on that, if you have a company who doesn't report good ESG data, it sounds like effectively you rely on third parties to help fill in some of the blanks there. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. And there's a lot of really good data sets out there that basically give us information at the industry level, at the company level, at the sector level. And so that, you know, more and more we take that data, and you might have heard the term used at time alternative data, mm-hmm. right? So we have these alternative data sets, and that basically gives us a lot of visibility into companies that we may not have had even, let's say, you know, 3-5 years ago. So it keeps improving and our transparency into these companies is something that we really pride ourselves on.
You mentioned the quantitative aspect to index construction on the back end, but when you look at this data, I'm curious, in interpreting it, especially if it's from third parties, how much subjectivity is involved?
Yeah, you know, that was the thing, too, when I came to this that always kind of puzzled me, because I thought, you know, what if this data is a little squishy or, you know, like you said, the subjectivity to it? But, you know, but part of it is not a subjective approach, but standardizing some of this data and making it relative to, let's say, industries. So, for example, you don't want to make a comparison between a steel company and a IT company and then compare them on some sort of metric. So we compare these metrics on a sub-industry or industry basis, and we basically compare them likes to likes. And then that way it gives us baselines or averages too that we can use to measure a certain category.
So this is perfect, because in just a bit I'll be discussing several ESG ETFs with iShares Sarah Shellberg. And I'd love to hear your perspective on just the importance of due diligence in this entire area and really evaluating underlying index construction. So what do you think are some of the key factors investors should look at as they implement sustainable investing strategies, especially if it's through index-based ETFs?
Right. Yeah. You know, and this is obviously a very important part of this process. And this is really where advisors can really help provide a lot of education and a lot of insights. And one of the more important things is making sure that there's kind of an alignment between what an index is doing, how it's constructed, and the objectives of the ultimate user of that index through, you know, something like an ETF product. And when I say alignment, what we're really talking about is what does the individual really care about? Do they care about, for example, certain exclusions? You know, they'll say, you know, we really don't want tobacco. We really don't want, different controversial weapons as part of it. And so they'll be looking perhaps for certain exclusions. But beyond those exclusions, we generally refer to three different categories. We'll say, okay, do they want ESG integration? And what that means is that manager will basically, or in the case, this index, right? This index will basically incorporate ESG data to improve the risk and return perspective of the index. In the case of values-based investing, there are certain values and certain exclusions that will basically govern the way the index is constructed. And in the case, for example, of impact investing, this is going to be an approach where you basically look to proactively seek opportunities, seek companies that are trying to do good in the world in terms of whether they do things like alternative energy or other green technologies or things like that. So the important thing here is to make sure that the individual understands and aligns that their end goal is aligned with the index that they select.
So with that alignment of interest, what are some ways an investor can do that? Because as you walk through those three different categories, there's a lot there. Now, I know MSCI offers various tools and analytics to help with ESG due diligence and really assess the sustainability of investments. But can you talk more about how an investor actually goes about doing this?
Sure. So for example, you know, it's gonna be a lot like the way that they're going to look at, for example, any other part of their portfolio allocation, portfolio construction process. They may decide, another way to think about these indexes is they may decide, look, we want an index that is going to basically have the look and feel of a market cap weighted index. And perhaps it's going to make some tilts in terms of the stock positions it takes, right? So something that's like that. Or they might want something that's best in class. Right, something where they want just the ESG leaders, and we have reports that basically help you understand the differences among these indexes. Or they may want something like what we term our focus index, that basically uses our optimizers and basically looks to maximize the ESG score, but subject to a minimum difference in the performance between an index and the ESG index. So a lot of these reports and analytics that we provide can be really helpful in understanding what the end index is going to look like as part of their entire portfolio.
Well, Guillermo, excellent insight this week, again, on a topic that is obviously growing in investor interest and attention. I'm sure this won't be our last conversation. Thank you for joining me.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
That was Guillermo Cano, Executive Director, Index Solutions Research at MSCI. I'm now joined by Sarah Gelberg, head of U.S. iShares Sustainable ETFs. Of course, iShares is the largest ETF issuer in the world. And here in the U.S., they currently offer over 380 ETFs, about $2 trillion invested. That includes a full lineup of ESG ETFs. And Sarah is now on the line with me from Los Angeles. Sarah, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining me this week.
Thanks so much, Nate. It's great to be here.
All right, so a lot I want to get to, but let's start with the growth of ESG investing. So I mentioned at the top of the podcast, there's no question ESG is garnering a lot more attention right now. I think this has been one of the hottest and probably most debated topics this year. And certainly we can look to the growth of ESG ETFs, which are taking in more assets. But I'm curious, what are you seeing across the BlackRock client base? Like, add some context for us. What kind of trends are you seeing from your side?
Sure. So, you know, as Larry Fink, our CEO, has said, you know, this topic globally that our clients are asking about is sustainability. And in our recent survey, we found that over half of global respondents consider sustainable investing to be fundamental to investment processes and outcomes. And so a few key trends that we're seeing with our clients are, first, you know, while sustainability was more of a fringe or satellite consideration, the growth of broad ESG solutions has really moved sustainability into the core portfolios. And the second is around reporting. So with this growth, our clients are asking for more transparency and reporting around ESG metrics, both at the fund and portfolio level. And third, it's around RFPs, which I think is really telling. It's nearly becoming a standard that our clients are requesting, you know, sustainability-related criteria in the RFPs that we receive. And then fourth is around benchmarks. So this view of kind of the standard or investment policy benchmarks being market cap weighted is really starting to change. And I would say particularly in Europe and in Asia, and it's changing to ESG benchmarks. And finally, I would just note that we are seeing kind of this growing number of interesting use cases that are related to ETFs. So large asset owners who are making this benchmark switch are choosing to really express that view with ESG ETFs. And a real key trend that we're also seeing is around wealth firms, RIAs, who are building, you know, complete sustainable models. And then certainly more recently, what we are seeing is advisors are starting to really reposition portfolios and tax loss harvest into ESG ETFs.
Yeah, talk more about the growth rate in ESG ETFs. So I know they still have a small asset base overall, but again, that growth rate has clearly picked up. We highlighted earlier that inflows this year are around $33 billion, have tripled from 2019. What can you tell us about that? Why is that growth rate accelerating?
Sure. So we've talked a lot about our belief that we are really in the beginning stages of a tectonic shift in investing. And, you know, BlackRock recently put out a report where we're forecasting that we'll see sustainable index assets globally exceed $1 trillion by the end of this decade. And this is really based on, you know, four driving forces. So the first is really kind of this broad driver, which is this recognition that sustainability impacts performance, right? That sustainability related risk are investment risks. And the second is this improvement in ESG data. So while not perfect, this explosion of data and, you know, companies providing more sustainability-related disclosures really make for, you know, more robust indices. And the third is around value. So where, you know, sustainable ETFs and index funds are now available at a fraction of the cost of kind of traditional mutual funds. And then finally, it's about access. So sustainable ETFs are really, you know, serving to simplify and expand access really to all investors.
Do you think the market environment, especially earlier this year, and you look at the pandemic and certainly some of the social unrest we saw earlier this year, has that factored into the equation at all in terms of the growth?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right that, you know, what we saw this year was, especially given the volatility, the social injustices, that these issues became really at the forefront of investors' minds, right? That these issues, whether it's related to the environment, whether it's related to social issues, these are financially material. You know, we're seeing that more and more investors are paying attention to issues like workplace policies, right? Certainly diversity and inclusion, and an issue that really has been really kind of an issue that has surfaced to, you know, the top for many investors globally, which is around climate. And climate is certainly going to continue to be a top issue that we're really focused on and making sure that our clients are, you know, incorporating kind of climate risks within their portfolios.
Sarah, taking a step back here, I've spoken with numerous asset managers on this podcast about ESG. And one thing I found is that there are some pretty substantial differences in how they view sustainable investing. So how does BlackRock think about this space? And I guess maybe another way to frame this is, ultimately, what's the goal with ESG investing?
Well, first, I guess, you know, just to level set, right? So the way that BlackRock defines sustainable investing is, it's really the umbrella term to describe, you know, investment strategies that combine traditional security analysis with environmental, social, and governance insights. And ESG is really kind of the data toolkit, if you will, that really derives these insights. And so, you know, in terms of, you know, how that then relates to products, what we have found is that, you know, investors really fall on a spectrum. There's really no one-size-fits-all strategy, but largely when it comes to, let's call it core ESG solutions, there's really two common approaches. The first is to eliminate exposure to companies that pose risks or may violate an investor's preferences, and the second is to really enhance your exposure to companies that are better ESG performers. And so in that first approach, we recently launched S&P screened ETFs for investors. And this was really about, you know, seeking a simple way to be able to maintain exposure to flagship indices, in this case, S&P, while removing companies with controversial business activities. And then we have two suites really in the second approach, ESG Aware, which takes an optimized approach, and then ESG Advanced, which is really designed for investors who prioritize sustainability. And then third is really around thematic ESG. And so these are really the solutions that focus on, you know, E, S, or G trends, you know, certainly, you know, such as clean energy. And then finally around impact. So these are solutions that pursue, you know, both a measurable, sustainable outcome alongside a financial return, which includes kind of strategies like green bonds.
So just backing up here a high level, if we look at the iShares ESG ETF lineup, there are these three categories, right? There are screened ETFs, which, as you mentioned, these seek to eliminate exposure to certain controversial business activities, those sorts of things. There's the aware lineup, which this balance is seeking similar risk return to the relevant broad market index, but still seeking a more sustainable outcome. And then the advanced lineup, where this prioritizes higher rated ESG companies and still screens out those with controversial activities. Can you just talk more from an investor standpoint as they go through that and they're thinking about due diligence and what fits for their particular situation? How do they do that?
Sure. So again, I think it's first and foremost, it's important to define the outcome that you're seeking to achieve, right? So, you know, we work with investors of all types, right, from some of the largest institutions, as well as, you know, retail investors. And so it's important to understand, you know, how much are you willing to take on in terms of active risk? So you think about ESG advanced, right? It's important to understand what is the level of screening that's involved, right? You know, how much active risk am I ultimately taking? And then when you think about our suite like ESG Advanced, again, when you think about prioritizing, these are really for investors who aren't really necessarily paying attention to the level of active risk. They simply want to make sure that they are going to remove, you know, all the headline risk. They want really kind of this forward-thinking view around fossil fuels, right? So very important from a due diligence perspective to understand, you know, how are these specific indices constructed? And I would even say down to the screens, right? Because even the screen definition will certainly dictate what are the specific securities that are going to be included and what are going to be excluded. When we think about ESG Aware, so this was really kind of our first kind of family of ESG ETFs. And we really designed these ETFs to serve asset allocators, right? The tracking error targets range on the equity side from 50 to 100 basis points. For fixed income, it's 10. So these products have really resonated, again, with asset allocators, model builders. But it's also important to note that, you know, there are going to be some companies within these indices that may not necessarily align with investors who have kind of, you know, highly prioritized sustainability, right? This is really taking more of an optimized approach. And then again, you know, thinking about the screened approach, you know, there's a number of investors that we work with that just simply say, look, we just don't want any of that headline risk. We want to take a, you know, kind of a simple market cap weighted approach and remove any exposure to some of these controversial business activities. So again, I think from a due diligence perspective, defining the specific outcome, understanding the level of specific kind of active risk that you might be taking on, and let that help kind of, you know, kind of lead your path down which solution is going to be right for you.
Sarah, as I think about the topic of ESG investing, sustainable investing, I think one of the best ways to educate here is to discuss some of the common pushbacks or some of the common critiques that you'll hear on ESG. And so if you don't mind, I'd like to go through a few of those. And we certainly won't do a full deep dive into these just for the sake of time. So think more rapid fire answers here, which I know doesn't do the topic justice, but I did want to make sure we got to some of these. So if you don't mind, let me go through these. The first one, and this is probably the most common concern or the biggest concern you'll hear from investors, is that they believe they may sacrifice performance with ESG. How would you respond to that?
Sure. I think the good news is that that myth has been debunked, right? That actually, if we look at even performance this year with the volatility, we actually found that a globally representative basket of sustainable indices, about 94%, had actually outperformed their benchmarks. So, you know, and looking even further in recent downturns, about 70% actually outperform. So again, kind of this notion that you need to sacrifice performance is no longer the case.
Do you think there needs to be more education just around that potential active risk or tracking error? So you mentioned very clearly with the iShares ESG lineup, how these are designed and some of the differences, but do you think there's enough education out in the broader public on that potential for active risk?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, first of all, I would say that education is critical, right? And this has been a core component of our strategy and really what we believe is necessary to help investors truly understand, right, whether it's active risk, whether it's sustainability risk. And so, yes, I think in looking at the various different types of solutions, what is that range of active risk that investors are willing to ultimately take on, right? And it's going to be contingent on, right, if you're a large, you know, pension, obviously that's going to be quite critical in your decision making, right? Versus, you know, an investor who is simply just looking at, you know, I really want, you know, more sustainability within my portfolios. I don't want to have exposure to these specific companies. You know, how much of that active risk are you ultimately willing to take on?
Okay, another criticism I hear, and you sort of alluded to this earlier, is that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to ESG. And the way I would frame this one is, if you look at some of the holdings in ESG ETFs, especially the broader ETFs, you might see a company that does very well on the environment, but maybe not so well on labor issues. Or maybe there's a company that has a fantastic track record on gender diversity, but a horrific track record on, I don't know, executive compensation. And so it feels like, for some investors, what's the point, right? You're supporting companies who do something pretty well, but then maybe they're doing something not so well. Do you have any thoughts on that, or how investors should sort of reconcile that?
Right. Well, first, from BlackRock's perspective, right, when we think about sustainability, why it is critically important is because we believe it's financially material, right? And so if we're looking at it through the lens of, right, not every company is going to be judged on every single potential kind of ESG issue, right? We are looking at what are going to be those specific issues that are going to be critical in determining, you know, a company's ultimate long-term value, right? So from an investor's perspective, absolutely, right? I mean, I think, you know, you've got to take a look at it from, you know, there could be kind of a personal perspective as well, right? Are there certain things that companies do that you're unwilling to kind of live with, so to speak, right? But when it comes to the way that we think about investing and the way that we construct these various different solutions is that we're looking at what are going to be those issues that are going to be most material, right? So if you think about it from an environment perspective, energy companies are going to be judged differently than, let's say, a financial services company, right? Clearly, right, energy companies, you want to be taking a look at their environmental records. Are they polluting, right? How much are they doing in terms of minimizing their overall kind of carbon emissions? What's going to be more material to a financial services company, though, is going to be issues like data privacy, right? Workplace policies, you know, human capital related issues. So again, I think, you know, if you can kind of parse that out and think about it from a perspective of from an investing standpoint, what's going to be material? And from, you know, investor perspective, you can also take a look at it. What are some of those key issues that aren't going to necessarily line up with my personal values?
All right. For the sake of time, I'm going to give you one more common criticism I hear, which is, what about this thought that if investors want to do good, they should wield their purchasing power instead, right? They should boycott companies' products and services that they disagree with, or spend their hard-earned dollars with the companies they believe are doing the right things, with the thought being maybe that would be a better job of moving the needle in the real world, right? That it's more direct. Now, I thought you just did a great job of outlining how you view, or how BlackRock views ESG in terms of what is the material financial impact of these different ESG factors on companies and the risk factors. But I know a lot of people will view ESG as perhaps trying to do better for society. Any thoughts on that line of thinking?
Well, I would just say that there's a number of different ways that you as a consumer or investor can take action, right? And certainly one of those aspects is what you just described, right? It's to direct your dollars to these products and services, to companies that align with, you know, your values. But the way that we look at it is also from a capital flow perspective, right? As you see kind of this sheer amount of assets that are controlled by large institutions, by, you know, individuals globally, if we can really channel those assets to move towards more sustainable companies, this is going to serve as more of, right, kind of the incentive for companies to also, right, be more sustainable and think more about the long term. So again, there's a number of different ways that investors can ultimately take action. And certainly investors have that choice. But again, we believe that more that we can kind of get behind, right, consistency in terms of, right, what are those important sustainable issues, that investors will certainly be rewarded.
About 2 minutes left here. Let's come back full circle. So we talked earlier about how more investors and advisors are looking to incorporate sustainable investing into their portfolios. Can you leave us with a few tips, or what are some of the key considerations for investors who are interested in implementing sustainable solutions?
Sure. I mean, I would just really highlight kind of two things. So one is incorporating ESG ETFs within the core of portfolios, right? So pairing it, with an asset active manager, thinking about ESG-aware suite tickers like ESGU for US, ESGD for international developed, and ESGE for emerging markets. You know, we also talked about our S&P screen. So XVV is actually the screen version of our S&P 500, as well as our ESG Advanced. So tickers like USXF for US and DMXF for international developed. And then secondly, it's targeting sustainable themes like climate as tactical positions. So, you know, of course, with renewables set to represent 3/4 of the $12 trillion the world will invest in a new power technology, ICLN, the iShares Global Clean Energy ETF, really provides access to 30 of the largest global companies that are involved both in the production and the distribution of renewable energy. iClean happens to also be one of the best performing ETFs for us this year with, you know, performance delivering over 100% so far this year.
Well, Sarah, we'll have to leave it there. Really enjoyed the conversation. I find this to be such an interesting topic. I thought you provided tremendous perspective this week. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
That was Sarah Gelberg, head of U.S. iShares Sustainable ETFs. That'll do it for this week's ETF Prime. I do want to thank our exclusive sponsor, iShares. You can visit iShares.com to learn more about their investment strategies. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Nate Geraci, or you can send comments through ETFPrime.com. Next week, the last live show of 2020. It's hard to believe, but we will go out in style. I'll be joined by two of the very best in the ETF business, Morningstar's Ben Johnson and ETF Trends' Dave Nottig. We are going to recap the year that was in ETFs and look ahead to 2021. Should be a lot of fun. Until then, have a great week, everyone.